Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to the program, UFO Warning. In this episode, we're taking a look at Africa's version of Bigfoot. Now, this is a really interesting topic, although I had a little trouble finding a lot of information on it. Of course, you know, with Google, it seems like you go through page after page after page of the same results before you find something really unique and interesting, and that's kind of how this subject seemed to work. I did find, it seems like the two most popular names for this Bigfoot creature Araka and Otang, and I found an article on imperidox.com, that's I-M-P-E-R-I-D-O-X, which I thought was really interesting, if you want to take a look at it. The title says, Raka, the South African Bigfoot, and then it says, across the sub-Saharan continent of Africa, it is possible to find tales and legends of strange and primal apes that are at least part human. Goes on, it says, Raka, the epic poem by N.P. Van Wicklow, tells a story of an innocent tribe's struggle against the seductive, corrupting, violent, and invading force of Raka, the man-ape that conquers, violates, and debases the tribe. Raka wins, values lose. Now, a couple things strike me in this short paragraph. First off, he refers to Raka as the man-ape, not ape-man. So this is a man with strong ape-like features. And this really kind of, this paragraph, this notion that this man-ape creature comes into this tribe, it conquers them, it violates them, it debases them, and it wins and values lose. This is a sort of story that reminds me of Genesis chapter 6 when it talks about the sons of man, or what many scholars interpret as fallen angels coming down to earth illegally, spiritually illegally, sleeping with women, producing offspring, teaching mankind all sorts of terrible, immoral, sinful behavior, along with how to wage war on each other, and just really wreaking havoc on the planet until what many people think was the reason for the flood to occur, this contamination of the human race. And this also goes into this in the book of Enoch. So this notion that this otherworldly entity enters mankind in his most intimate functions and just debases the entire species. And you kind of see that with this notion of this Raka, the ape man, coming in. He must have had something that entices people to let him in. And then once he was in, then it all breaks loose. It says that hunters set out the next day. They saw the wrath of Raka, Koki's broken body trodden in the clay, his spear crushed, his shield smashed. Raka now always joins us in our alien dance with desire from the wild chase and capture and mating and screaming under force of mysterious and unbridled rapture. Whew. And that's from the coming forth of Raka. Well, there's a lot of heavy, dark stuff in that paragraph right there. The hunters set out the next day. They saw the wrath of Raka, Koki's broken body trodden into the clay, his spear crushed, his shield smashed. Raka now always joins us in our alien dance with desire from the wild chase and capture and mating and screaming under force a mysterious and unbridled rapture. You know, there's all of the darkness and the curse that you read through the Old Testament, you know, of the alienation between a husband and wife, Cain slaying Abel, all this chaos, this darkness, really this evil that we see unfold in the beginnings of the Old Testament. I look at this little poem right here, and it's like, this is the mirror image of this Raca. You know, he's committed murder. They're engaging in some sort of alien dance. They're describing things that they can't understand, and then the mating is screaming under force. You know, that's not right. This whole peaceful, idyllic situation that these folks lived in this primitive tribal conditions, now just rocked by this man-ape creature. It goes on, it says, Raca ape man. Across the sub-Saharan continent of Africa, it is possible to find tales and legends of strange and primal apes that are at least part human. These creatures go by many names. Billy ape, Bondo ape, Chemosit, Carrot, Kikombo, and of course Raca. In general, all these creatures have several aspects in common. They are considered to be half man and half ape. They are predators. They represent both spirituality and in practice the darker side of humanity. And they live in the shadows and are often only seen at night. It is very important to point out that the central forests of equatorial Africa are both huge and dangerous. To put this in perspective, it is quite possible that more of the Amazon rainforest has been explored than the central and northern regions of Uganda, the Central African Republic, Niger, Rwanda, Burundi, Cameroon, and the Congo. And, you know, I think it's important to keep in mind, I believe it was just the part of Africa that's north of the Sahara is larger than the continental United States. And as I recall, the continent of Africa is about three times the size of continental United States. This is a huge landmass that we're talking about. And although the population of Africa, I think, is now bordering on 1.2 billion, remember, most of those people live in large metropolises, huge cities. So you still have large areas that are undeveloped or underdeveloped. It says, quote, the porters huddle closer to the fire. The white man casts a reassuring glance upon his guns and pours himself into a chota peg. On such a night prowls Carrot, the devil beast of darkness. Captain W. Hitchens, late of the Intelligence and Administrative Services, East Africa, 1937. During the early 1900s, many Western explorers, missionaries, and colonial administrators based in Africa reported encounters with strange ape-like creatures. Alfred R. Potting describes such an event that took place in 1916. Quote, the man-beast seemed attracted to the fire and prodded at it with an acacia branch that he had wrenched from a tree to which we had secured our tents. Our terrified trekkers had long since fled, but Hawkins, Vandermeer, and I stayed behind with our rifles leveled at its barrel chest. Although the size of a lowland gorilla, it resembled no ape in my guide, at last, tired of its tomfoolery, it raised its domed head. With dark and wicked eyes, it smiled, revealing teeth that could have severed a man's leg. Then it was gone to the bush from where it came. Later, as I lay awake, I asked myself, what animal smiles? Well, it's got a point. This thing, what animal does smile? Now, we look at it, if you see an animal that smiles, like, say, a chimpanzee, that's not a sign of that they're teasing you or fooling around. That's a sign of aggression. When you see an animal smiling like that, it's a sign of aggression. This thing, and he describes it as this man-ape, it was engaging the humans, and it was smiling like a human does. So you see, it was mimicking them. Or maybe it actually had the empathy or the capacity to feel what humans feel. Who knows? It says, stories of these giants, half-human creatures reached America in the 1920s, and soon the 1933 film King Kong featured a giant ape that falls in love with its sacrificial victim, actress Anne Darrow, hit the silver screen. Kong is clearly an ape, but displays many human qualities. In South Africa, Africans writer M.P. Van Wyk Lau wrote an epic poem about a creature that was half man, half ape, entitled Raca. The poem tells the story of a tribe in Africa that is initially content with its own existence. However, this is not to last, and from the deep jungles and shadowy canyons comes Fourth, Raka. His presence both frightens and excites the tribe to live and behave in a way that is no longer in line with their perception of civilization. Koki, a warrior and spiritual leader, prepares to fight the beast and sets off to do so. He is defeated and dies a martyr's death. The tribe sublimate themselves to the violent passions of Raka in order to survive, but in doing so, their culture, old beliefs, and inherent nobility must die in their place. At its most obvious, the poem is a depiction of the battle between good and evil, where evil triumphs, but much has been written about the poem, and many people believe that it was a metaphor for the destruction of African culture by the overwhelmingly powerful colonial invaders. It is very possible that he based the story and even the name of the beast on a much older version of the story that he heard from the indigenous peoples of the Eastern Cape District. Goes on, he says, Otang, South Africa, Raka. As early as 2009, wildlife photographer and environmentalist Gareth Peterson has been researching a mysterious Bigfoot-like creature called Otang that may live in the deep Kinsinya forest. He has recently published a book on his findings entitled Beyond the Secret Elephants. Now, if you go online, you'll find lots and lots of podcast interviews this guy's done. Pretty interesting stuff. And you might note that this Kinsinya Forest, now that's in South Africa. If you imagine the very tip down there of South Africa, with Cape Town being over on the west coast, this here Kinsinya Forest would be like in the middle of it. And I believe that it's around 2,500 hectares, which about 6,000 acres. Or to give you an idea, this is about a 9-mile square area where this park is at. This jungle area, I guess you would say. So that's a pretty good-sized area where you really don't have any humans to speak of living. Now, he says, the man-ape theme has persisted through the years and right across vast continent of Africa. Always the story is similar. It is a creature that has savage intelligence and a body that is half human, half ape. The size of the creature varies, but it is usually described as 7 to 9 feet tall and capable of walking on its hind legs like a man. It is a nocturnal predator that sometimes contents itself to raid livestock, but at other times it will brazenly force its way into a settlement and cause havoc. Although not a demon or a creature from another spiritual dimension, it was believed to be that these creatures could be summoned and controlled by witch doctors or others that had made alliances with the other world. Well, I have to say, I think the author's taken a little bit of liberty here, perhaps, when they say that it was not believed to be a demon or a creature from another spiritual dimension. Because anytime that you're involving witch doctors, you're involving another spiritual dimension. That's the whole point of having a witch doctor. Or good, bad, or indifferent. You're seeking out somebody who either has powers or has access to powers that are otherworldly, whether those powers are used for good or bad. The point is, without being spiritual, the witch doctor is no better than, vitamin salesman. I mean, plenty of people, in tribal people, indigenous people, whether it's in Africa or, the Native Americans that were here, plenty of people knew about which berries to eat, which roots to eat, which ones could be used for your day-to-day health, which ones could be used, say, to stop blood clotting, which ones could be used for everything. Pretty much the same way we used modern medicine today, they had to use what was available to them in the form of different plants and roots and berries and so on to try to make it through a day. There's nothing really spiritual about that. That's just the mechanics of nature. If you're seeking out a witch doctor, on the other hand, then your problem must be spiritual in nature or supernatural in nature. You're trying to gain control over something, whether it's a physical ailment, or maybe it's a romance relationship, or maybe someone's seeking revenge, or someone's seeking help. They're needing help with something that they're unable to address in the physical. And it looks like these witch doctors are summoning these Raka or Otang as a way to aid in whatever they're trying to get done. And you see that in some of these stories that we hear from the Native Americans in this country when it comes to skinwalkers. And when you have when you have medicine men who say go over to the dark side, and suddenly they're becoming or they're summoning skinwalkers, usually to act in a negative way towards someone. This is most often correlated with some sort of a curse or some sort of a negative action. And in the same way that these skinwalkers seem to be able to phase in and out of a physical body, it looks to me like these African Bigfoot, these Otang or Raka or whatever, are doing the same thing. They're seen at night mostly. They seem very mysterious. No really explanation of how they're living or foraging or reproducing or any of that. They seem to be. I mean, the most logical explanation is that they are, in fact, interdimensional or spiritual. They're phasing in and out of a biological body. That's what it looks like. The same thing we see happening with these UFOs. They're phasing in and out of a mechanical state. You know, they're an orb, then they become a spaceship, and then they're back to being an orb or maybe a bolt of lightning or something. We see this constantly. It's this shape-shifting phenomena. It's a common denominator between these Bigfoot entities, whatever they are, skinwalkers, whatever they are, UFOs, whatever they are. This ability to change shapes and to shift in and out of our reality. That's the commonality that I see. It goes on and says, as colonialists pushed their way into Africa and more Africans migrated to the newly built cities, the sightings and belief in these ape creatures has faded. However, it is wholly possible that they did once exist and may still exist to this day, hidden in the deep forest of Zaire, Uganda, and Kinyasna. It's spelled Kinysna. Four main theories have been put forward to explain their possible existence. The first is that they are a natural but very rare human-ape hybrid. Educated geneticists will immediately point out that this is impossible, as even the chimpanzee, which is alleged to have 98% of the same DNA that humans do, is incapable of interbreeding due to a differing number of chromosomes. Humans 24, chimps 23. Yep. Okay, just to set the record straight, and I'm sure that if this is incorrect, I'll be corrected in the comments, but isn't it true that a banana has, like, I don't know, 80 or 90% common DNA with a human? I mean, really, 98% sounds like a lot, but it's that 1 or 2% that make all the difference in the world. In fact, it's probably 1/10 of 1% that make all the difference in the world. It goes on and says, how recent research has shown that humans and chimpanzees separated in evolutionary terms much later than originally believed. In addition, it is also appears that the two lines separated, merged, and separated again at least once. It is possible that there was an unknown species of ape that retained enough genetic similarity. And then it goes on and says, the second theory is based on human and Neanderthal evolution. The Neanderthal, or Neanderthal, is an extinct member of the Homo genus that died out approximately 25,000 years ago. Modern man knows of their existence largely due to fairly recently discovered fossils and skeletal remains from Europe and Asia. Look, anytime you're trying to talk about a human-ape, hybrid, or Neanderthals, or some sort of missing link, as far as I'm concerned, you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. There's no way in the world that I see that there is enough undisturbed territory, I don't care if it's in the middle of Africa or the middle of Washington State, to support a thriving population of these large bipeds where they wouldn't have been discovered. I mean, we have satellites now that are viewing all this stuff, and especially as modern humans push into these jungles to begin extracting minerals, you know, whether it's lithium or gold or whatever. Somewhere along the line, especially in Africa, where there's a lot of hungry folks, somebody would have shot one of these things. This is why I think these things cannot be solely a biological creature. And when you go down the lines of, well, could it be a hybrid? Could it be a lost creature? population of Neanderthals, whatever. That line of reasoning never pans out. It goes on and says, when they disappeared, it's still a matter for conjecture, but it's largely believed it was a combination of climate. Well, you can't get through an article without reading about, you can't get through an article without hearing the word conspiracy theory or climate change. Now, if we go on down here a little bit further, we can see a third theory is that these creatures are or were a very rare form of ape that has yet to be discovered or that became extinct in recent years. The journals of early explorers of Africa often recorded strange creatures that have never been confirmed by science. An exception to this was the Okapi. The historical record referred to it as the African unicorn, and early explorers described it as a half zebra, half giraffe. The creature's existence was finally confirmed in 1902 and given the name Okapi Johnstoni. There were and still are thousands of these animals in the wild. In practice, a fully sustainable breeding population needs only a few hundred individuals as long as a group has a full range of inherited genetic diversity. It is possible, although unlikely, that science will still discover these ape-man creatures in some remote and isolated ecosystem. I have to disagree with that. A population of a few hundred might work, with rabbits. But you get into even with dogs and cats. I mean, especially humans. The more complex that creature is, the more diversity it requires. We can see this in some of our populations, like with certain religious sects. Like throughout the Midwest and West, with a lot of the Amish and the Old Order Amish, where they have married within a certain group of people now for 100 years or better, they're having real problems. They're having problems with birth defects, with not having healthy babies, and they're desperately trying to inject new blood into the population so that they can have that diversity. And that's what the population's that's in the tens of thousands. Now, I just don't believe for a minute that you could have a population of creatures that were this much human. They say half human, half ape. Probably sounds more like 80% human, 20% ape. How could you keep a population of 300 or 400 of these creatures and ever hope to have the diversity that you need to carry on that bloodline for what's been now hundreds of years? That makes no sense to me. It goes on and says, a final thought is this: as long as some people believe in and fear a creature, then the beast lives on, if only in their minds. I find that to be a cop-out, actually, because although the article was interesting and I like some of the points in it, you see that, like with a lot of these articles that are written, they never entertain the possibility that this thing could be something that they just don't understand. They live in a two-dimensional world, and they are in total denial that a third dimension exists, let alone a fourth, fifth, or sixth dimension. Overall, though, I thought they did a decent job talking about the history of it, and I think it's important that people understand that this phenomena, whether it's UFOs or skinwalkers or Bigfoot or ghost or whatever, these paranormal phenomena that we talk about so much, they don't just exist in the place where you're at or in the state you live in or the country that you live in. These are global phenomena. They occur all over the world. These stories exist with every people group, with every subgroup, with every tribe, within every family. We all know about them and have known about them for thousands of years. Dated clear back to Genesis, okay? Pictures written on cave walls. Stories handed down among indigenous peoples for generations and generations. But yet, given all that oral tradition and written tradition that's been handed down for thousands upon thousands of years now, a large percentage of the population still wants to live in 100% denial, denying that the possibility of the paranormal or the extra normal or UFOs or Bigfoot or any of this stuff could ever exist. Until next time, this is UFO Warning, over and out.